Hi, this is the March-April 2024 issue of Super STEM from Scholastic. Front cover, space science. Striking back at space rocks. Scientists test a bold plan to protect our planet from dangerous asteroids. And before we get to that article, let's turn right to page 3 for mini STEM reads. Sea sounds is the title of the illustration at the top of the page. Blub, click, thump, pop. The ocean is full of noisy creatures making sounds like these. Scientists have found that more than 1,000 species of ocean creatures, from fish to whales to crabs, make all kinds of noises. Scientists have recorded these sounds and want to find more. They've put special waterproof microphones in oceans all over the world. These microphones capture vibrations called sound waves produced when animals make noise. The recordings will be put in an online catalog for anyone to explore. Scientists will learn many things from the noises. They'll figure out which species made each sound to study how animals communicate. And they hope to learn if ship and oil drilling noises causes stress in animals and make it harder for them to communicate. Also on this page, STEM Barbies. There is a photo of three women. Mattel recently created look-alike Barbies honoring seven women working in science, technology, engineering, and math fields. The goal is to inspire more girls to pursue STEM careers. And on the left, it's Anchi Boshius, exploring the deep sea using underwater robots. She studies how climate change affects Earth's oceans and polar regions. And she now has her own Barbie. There's also Maggie Adarin Pocock, is a space scientist who works on satellites and space telescopes. She also hosts a TV show about the night sky. And she, too, now has her own Barbie. And Katya Echezarada is an electrical engineer who worked on the Mars rover Perseverance for NASA. In 2022, she became the first Mexican-born woman to go into space. And we see her Barbie version as well. Continuing with mini STEM reads, what gives your eyes their color? Look closely at your eyes in the mirror. You might see streaks of chestnut brown, ocean blue, or forest green in your iris, the colorful part of your eye. Have you ever wondered why people have different colored eyes? Eye color comes from melanin, the same substance that gives our skin and hair their special shades of color. The iris is made up of two layers in almost every eye. The cells that make up the back layer have a brown color. In brown eyes, some cells in the front layer of the iris also have melanin. The more melanin, the darker the eye. In blue eyes, there is no melanin at all in this front layer. If your eyes are green or hazel, this layer likely has a bit of melanin that causes your eye to appear not quite brown but not quite blue. Eye color is an inherited trait. That's a characteristic passed down from generation to generation in your biological family. Information from your parents' cells combine to tell your eye cells how much melanin to produce. Because of how eye color is inherited, you may not have the same eye color as your parents. But if both of your parents had the same eye color, you're likely to have it too. Everyone's eye color is unique. You and a family member may share the same color eyes, says Shivani Kamat, an eye doctor in Texas. But how much melanin is in your iris and how it is spread out is special to each person. And on the next page, there is an illustration of a pie chart showing the frequency of eye color in the U.S. Green, 9%, hazel, 18%, blue, 27%. Brown, 45%, and other, 1%. And now on to the cover story. Can Earth be saved from a city-smashing space rock? To find out, scientists and engineers tested a daring plan. Before we begin with the article, some STEM words to know. Solar system. a system made up of a star and the objects that move around it. Asteroid, a large space rock that travels around the sun but is not a planet. Orbit, to move in a curved path around a star, planet, or other space object. Collide, to hit with force while moving. Now on to the article. She was standing with dozens of scientists and engineers. They were crowded into a physics lab in Maryland in September 2022. Some hunched over computers, others gazed at a large screen at the front of the room. Their nervous eyes watched a live video taken from space. All they could see was a tiny dot of light surrounded by total blackness. And the woman they're referring to is Nancy Chabot. She's a scientist who studies our solar system. For years, she had been working with scientists around the world. They had been studying two asteroids, or large space rocks. Their work was part of a NASA mission called the Double Asteroid Redirection Test, DART. Its goal was to launch a spacecraft and crash it into one of the asteroids. Then they would see what happens. Why would scientists want to crash a spacecraft into an asteroid? To protect our planet. Thousands of asteroids fly past Earth all the time. If a large asteroid were to hit our planet, the result could be devastating. That's why in 2015, scientists and engineers began working on the DART mission. If they could use a spacecraft to nudge an asteroid, they reasoned, they could push a dangerous space rock off its path toward Earth. Our planet would be safe. The team anxiously waited for the DART spacecraft to reach the asteroids. Finally, a second and even tinier bright dot appeared on the screen. The DART spacecraft had both asteroids in its camera sights. The room sighed with relief. But the scientists couldn't celebrate yet. The moment they had spent years planning for, when the spacecraft would crash into the target space rock, was still to come. Would this be the planet-saving solution they hoped for? Only the test would tell. Earth is one of eight planets in our solar system. These huge space objects whirl around the sun in oval-shaped paths. They're not alone. Millions of smaller space rocks, called asteroids, orbit the sun as well. Asteroids come in many shapes and sizes. Some are round, others are shaped like dog bones, ears, or mushrooms. The smallest are 3 feet, 1 meter wide. The largest is wider than the state of Arizona. For decades, scientists have used strong telescopes to observe asteroids from Earth. They search space for asteroids that could impact our planet. Small space rocks head toward Earth all the time. The smallest ones burn up in Earth's atmosphere before they hit the ground. When a very large asteroid impacts Earth, it could lead to disaster. 66 million years ago, an asteroid more than 6 miles, 10 kilometers wide, smashed into the planet. It struck Earth off the coast of what is now Mexico. Scientists think the impact caused earthquakes, massive waves, and wildfires. Dust and ash blocked the sun. As a result, many animals became extinct, including the dinosaurs. So, should we worry about another giant asteroid hitting Earth today? Definitely not, Chabot says. Scientists have studied the large asteroids in our solar system. They have found no asteroids more than 0.6 miles, 1 kilometer wide, will hit our planet in the next 100 years. But there are thousands of medium-sized asteroids that scientists haven't found yet. If an asteroid a few hundred meters wide were to strike Earth, it could wipe out an area the size of a city, says Chabot. It could mean incredible devastation. If a dangerous asteroid is headed toward Earth, scientists want to be ready. And that's where DART comes in. In 2015, Chabot and hundreds of scientists from around the world got together. Their mission was to figure out how to defend our planet from Earth-bound space rocks. Scientists have come up with many possible solutions. They could blow up an asteroid with explosives, or they could use a spacecraft to drag the asteroid in a new direction. But for each of these ideas, engineers would need to create new technology. The DART team had a simpler plan. They would crash a spacecraft into an asteroid. They hoped that, like a marble colliding with another rolling marble, the nudge could change the asteroid's path, and that new path would send it soaring away from Earth. Would that plan work on a dangerous asteroid? To find out, the team needed to test it on an asteroid that was not a threat. They soon found the perfect space rock for the task. A football field-sized asteroid called Dimorphos. It moves around a larger asteroid named Didymos. The pair travel together around the Sun near Earth and Mars. One reason Dimorphos was a good asteroid for the test is that its movements were easy to see from Earth. Scientists could use telescopes to watch its shadow moving across Didymos. If that path changed after the spacecraft hit it, that would mean the test was a success. Scientists knew Dimorphos was not a threat to Earth. They had calculated that even after the test, there was no chance it could hit our planet. It took the DART team 5 years to prepare the mission. On November 24, 2021, a rocket carrying the DART spacecraft took off from California. Once in space, two enormous solar panels unfolded. They would give DART power. Its journey to Dimorphos had begun. Finally, 10 months later, the day of the test arrived. The DART team called it Impact Day. Scientists and engineers were about to see if their planning, building, and testing would pay off. And it wasn't just the DART mission team watching. Video from DART was broadcast on the internet to the whole world. The DART team had not seen Dimorphos up close, so no one knew what it would look like. We know asteroids can have weird shapes, says Shabbat. If the rock was not round, it might make it hard to crash the DART spacecraft into it as planned. The spacecraft closed in on Dimorphos. The team watched and waited. For the test to work, a computer program had to guide the spacecraft to hit Dimorphos. The room grew quiet as the asteroid's round shape and bumpy surface came into view. DART moved closer and closer and closer. And then all of a sudden, crash! The room erupted in cheers. It was a really powerful moment, Shabbat says. The spacecraft had hit its target, but would it move the asteroid? In the months after the impact, scientists observed Dimorphos closely. Its orbit around Didymos was smaller and took less time to complete. The test had worked. The DART mission proved that humans could change the path of an asteroid, but scientists' work defending Earth from objects in space is far from over. NASA is now working on a new space telescope called the Near-Earth Object, NEO, Surveyor. It will spot asteroids up to 30 million miles, 48 million kilometers from Earth. Medium-sized asteroids at that distance are too far away for telescopes on Earth to spot, and they are too close for most space telescopes to detect. The telescope is set to be launched in 2028. We've taken this first step to protect our planet from objects that might hit it, says Shabbat. There's a lot more work to do. And there are several pictures and illustrations associated with this article, so ask your parent, teacher, or guardian to go over those illustrations and photos with you. Next up, we're on page 12 now. A slimy superhero? It's true, slippery seaweed is helping us make a greener world. Before we begin the article, these STEM words to know: fertilizer, a substance often added to soil that gives plants nutrients and helps them grow. Spore, a single cell that some living things use to reproduce. Sustainable, able to continue over time without destroying natural resources. Fossil fuel, an energy source like oil and gas that form from decayed plants and animals in Earth's crust over millions of years. Now on to the article. On a chilly March morning, farmer Charlie Dilius puts on warm pants and sturdy rubber boots. He slips on a bright orange life jacket and hops into a motorboat. Unlike most farmers, Dilius doesn't work on land. His farm floats in the ocean, and the crop he grows is seaweed. Seaweed is a plant-like organism that grows in water. There are more than 10,000 species of seaweed. Many people only see it when it washes up on the beach. You might think it's icky or annoying, and Dilius doesn't blame you. It's kind of slimy and really slippery if you step on it, he says. But a growing number of people see it as an earth-friendly crop with all kinds of exciting uses. Dilius works at Blue Dot Sea Farms in Hood Head, Washington. Every year, he and his crew grow 15,000 pounds, 6,800 kilograms, of a type of seaweed called kelp. Their harvest is sold to restaurants and turned into a crunchy snack food. Other farmers grow seaweed to turn into fertilizer, animal feed, and even products such as shoes and skateboards. Eating seaweed isn't a new idea. Asian cultures have used it in dishes like soup and sushi for more than 1,000 years. Indigenous people from Alaska to the South Pacific have grown it in sea gardens. They use it for food and traditional medicine. Since the 1930s, food companies have used an ingredient made from seaweed as a thickener. It gives a rich, smooth texture to products like barbecue sauce and ice cream. Many people in the U.S. aren't used to eating seaweed on its own, but people like Dilius are trying to change that. There are hundreds of different types of edible seaweed. They're a good source of important vitamins, minerals, and protein. Plus, says Dilius, seaweed is tasty. Fresh kelp reminds me of a snap pea without the stringy fibers, he says. And despite growing in seawater, it's not as salty as you would think. Seaweed grows naturally along most of the world's coastlines. Dilius collects seed-like spores from wild kelp and grows them in an aquarium tank. After a few weeks, the spores are about the size of a grain of rice. He attaches them to long ropes in the ocean. The ropes keep the kelp from floating away. After Dilius places the ropes, he waits. If everything goes right, you don't really do a whole lot, he says. Seaweed grows fast, up to a foot a week, and unlike most crops, it doesn't need to be watered or fertilized. It absorbs everything it needs from the ocean around it. By comparison, growing enough lettuce, tomato, and cucumber for just one salad takes about 21 gallons, 80 liters of fresh water, and that's more water than you drink in a month. Because seaweed needs so few resources to grow, scientists consider it more sustainable than many land crops, and it can be used for more than just snacking. Seaweed can be added to food for cows and other livestock, replacing the land plants that require more water. Some substances in seaweed can also be used as fertilizer for other crops. They're better for the environment than the artificial fertilizers most farmers use today. What gets scientists most excited about seaweed might surprise you. Bradley Moore is a chemist who studies seaweed at the University of California, San Diego. With seaweed, we can find a greener way to make materials that are important to us, he explains. Today, many products, from toys to clothes to computers, contain plastic. Almost all plastics are made using ingredients from fossil fuels like oil and gas. The collection and use of fossil fuels pollutes the environment. Scientists like Moore have found ways to make plastic using substances in seaweed instead of fossil fuels. Seaweed-based plastic has already been used to make shoe soles and sturdy foam surfboards. Unlike traditional plastic, which stays in the environment for centuries, this plastic eventually breaks down harmlessly. Seaweed can even be processed into fuel to power cars and heat our homes. That could help reduce the use of fossil fuels and slow climate change. Scientists still have to figure out how seaweed could be used as a fuel on a large scale, but more is helpful. It's an exciting future, he says. There are now more than 100 seaweed farms in the U.S. Can you imagine snacking on seaweed while wearing seaweed clothes and driving a seaweed-powered car? That day might come sooner than you think. And associated with this article, several illustrations along with some photos. Ask your parent, teacher, or guardian to review those with you. I'm going to skip over the article on crazy clouds because it has several illustrations. So ask your parent, teacher, or guardian to review those illustrations with you. And the same for the next article on would you rather banish ocean trash or zap dirty air? You decide. Several illustrations and photos associated with that decision-making process as well. So ask your parent, teacher, or guardian to go over those with you and review. So we'll finish up with their article, STEM to the Rescue, Saving the Night. The darkness is key to the survival of bats and many other animals. How can we keep it from disappearing? The sun is set and the moon glows as you pull up your covers and begin to nod off to sleep. There's a creature outside your window doing just the opposite. An owl swivels its head, listening for prey. It's alert and refreshed from a day's rest. It's not alone. Many other animals are just waking up. A fox creeps on silent paws. Bats take flight in a whoosh of wings. Moths and crickets emerge from bushes and trees. These are nocturnal animals, and they thrive in the darkness. In fact, they couldn't survive without it. But this darkness is disappearing. Artificial light, light produced by humans, blazes from sources like street lamps, billboards, and security lights. As a result, much of our planet is never completely dark at night. In fact, the planet is getting brighter all the time. One study found that the night sky has been doubling in brightness every 8 years. This light pollution is harming animals that are active at night. Artificial light hasn't been around very long. About 150 years ago, the light bulb was invented. It changed the world forever. Thanks to electric light, people could see well after the sun went down. That allowed them to easily work, travel, and play at night. Some artificial light is needed for human safety. Lights along streets help people drive more safely at night, but many artificial lights are not necessary. For instance, billboards and stadiums often have lights that stay on all night long. Cities produce so much light that the stars become hard to see. That happens when light reflects off dust and water particles in the air, causing the night sky to glow. Most living things are adapted to live in a world with a daily pattern of light and dark. Large amounts of light at night harms them. In just the past few decades, humans have created an enormous amount of light at night, says Franz Holker. He's a scientist who studies the effects of light pollution. Living things are not prepared for that. It's the middle of the night and a bat is on the hunt. It gobbles up the mosquitoes in a clearing and then begins to soar across a road but stops. For the bat, the street lights act like a roadblock. Bats have eyes that can see in near darkness, so even small amounts of light bothers them and changes their behavior. Some types of bats avoid areas that are lit up at night. As a result, they may not be able to hunt enough to survive. Other bat species are drawn to street lights, making them vulnerable to predators like owls. Bats play an important role in nature. Without them, the population of mosquitoes and other pests could grow out of control. Artificial light puts certain insects, like moths, in danger. Many insects use light from stars to know where they are. Artificial light makes them lose their way. That's why you see so many bugs buzzing near streetlights at night. There, they become easy prey for certain predators like spiders. Spiders use streetlights like a buffet, says Holker. That's good for the spiders, but birds and other animals depend on those insects as a food source. So if those insects disappear, other animals that eat them can go hungry. Light pollution harms other animals, too. When baby turtles hatch on beaches, they use the light of the moon to find the ocean. Artificial lights lead them off their path. Lost hatchlings are at risk of threats like being run over by cars. Light pollution has also caused tree frogs to silence their mating calls and salmon to swim in the wrong direction. How can humans help cut down on light pollution? Some communities are taking important steps. Many beach towns in Mexico, Australia, and other countries have banned artificial lights during sea turtle hatching season. The ban has had a big effect. Some beaches found that all of their baby turtles headed toward the sea. Not one hatchling got lost. Laws can help, but there are other steps communities can take right now, says Holker. Street light should be as dim as possible and designed to direct light to the ground. A color swap can help, too. Artificial light that's orange or red in color bothers living things less than lights with a blue tint. With just a few simple adjustments, people can help bring back the darkness around their homes and neighborhoods. It's easy to reduce light pollution, says Holker. Anyone can do it. And that's going to be the final article from Scholastic's Super STEM, their March-April 2024 edition. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.